Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to a new episode of the Phoenix MMA podcast. It's been a bit since the last episode. I've had a lot of different ideas on episodes, but just haven't been fully coming together. So sometimes they take several months to put them together, and it's not actually that. It's actually current workload. So stress, personal stress and workload. So don't like to do the podcast episodes if not in a good headspace, too much stress or too much of a workload. I'll either push the episode out and I won't be happy with the message that's delivered, and the content won't be the best quality, and then also just actual life stress of just being extremely busy. So if you know that stuff, then you know what it is. So new episode. This episode is Beginner's Guide to Joining an MMA Gym, Jiu-Jitsu Edition. So the purpose of this episode is going to be for anyone who is has just joined a Jiu-Jitsu gym or joined an MMA gym. You're focused on Jiu-Jitsu. Or it could be for a jiu-jitsu gym as well. MMA gyms and specifically jiu-jitsu gyms, there are different cultural things that are different between them. I'll give it with the MMA gym perspective because we're Phoenix MMA. And I'll give some tips on some jiu-jitsu perspective as well. Or if it's a specifically jiu-jitsu gym, there are subtle differences. I prefer the MMA model. Because I really like MMA, I really like wrestling, I really like boxing, I really like kickboxing, Muay Thai, and Jiu-Jitsu, and I really like MMA Jiu-Jitsu. There is a difference between an MMA gym and a specifically Jiu-Jitsu gym. I have trained in several just purely Jiu-Jitsu gyms. My issue with it is they start to get a little closed-minded and they don't implement or ignore and kind of get in an echo chamber and ignore. And this happens in all facets of life, not just in martial arts, but if martial arts is not immune to it, you could go to a pure Jiu-Jitsu gym. Actually, I've heard it, a pure Jiu-Jitsu gym, and they're discussing like there's no importance to wrestle. There's no importance to learn how to wrestle or box or kickbox, which is just, this is just, and this is actually in the context of self-defense or fighting. It's like, this is just silly. This is crazy. But people get into echo chambers and they start telling each other what they want to hear. And that gets reinforced and then it just keeps going. So there will be a little bit. And also I've noticed that when you have a pure, say, jiu-jitsu gym, pure wrestling, most of the time it's a college or high school program or a pure Muay Thai. When there's a purity of a thing, I say purity, like there's not other disciplines that are being practiced. That discipline will be hyper developed and it will be good lots of times. Like the quality of it will be good, but there will be a lot of blind spots and there's more strange kind of cult-like behavior. Again, just the nature of if you're ignoring other aspects of combat sports and you are saying that your style is superior and it's not necessary to have the other ones, that's a pretty... it's a pretty narrow-minded approach, pretty closed-minded approach, and that's a lot of... illogical assumptions and statements that are being made. So it would make sense that other cult-like behavior will kind of sneak into those environments because if your base level of reality when it comes to combat sports is already built on a false cult-like where you have to believe in it. If not, people kind of look at you weird. If your base foundation on what you're doing, which is combat sports, is off, then it makes everything else that stacks on top. It's going to be easier to have weird little fallacies of logic and culty things. So I might touch on that a little bit for some entertainment, some of the funny things. But yeah, so this one's going to be a guide. So if you're a brand new student or if you've been training for a bit, you might enjoy this one. You might appreciate it because it might give you a couple little things that you're not aware of, that your instructor is looking for, or in a gym program. This would be just a guide. And if you've never trained or you just started training, this would be a perfect time to listen to this episode. The purpose is going to be to let you know what to think, what to be ready for when you go into a jiu-jitsu gym, what's going to be expected of you, tips on how to learn the fastest, how every culture, whether it's professional culture or hobby culture or whatever, all cultures have these little idiosyncrasies and little things. Some things are frowned upon, some things are praised, and not all of these things are verbally explained. Lots of times you have to learn it from experience, paying attention to your environment, reading books, listening to podcasts, stuff like that will help. But I'm going to try to cram in like 10 years worth of knowledge into a short, concise thing that'll help you out. It'll help your experience go smoother, cleaner. It'll also help you learn faster, and hopefully this will overall make your experience better. It'll just optimize your experience. I'm going to do one also when it comes to wrestling, when you're joining an MMA gym for wrestling, coming from a wrestling perspective, and also when you join an MMA gym coming from a boxing and kickboxing perspective, so a striker's perspective. My background, I started with wrestling, so I've been in just the strictly wrestling culture. Then I went to an MMA gym and had everything mixed together. Then went to specifically jiu-jitsu gyms, strict, and then specifically a boxing gym, like that's all they had was boxing, and then also specifically Muay Thai gym as well. So I've been in all these different realms where they're specific and they're just focused on that one thing. But in an MMA gym, there's going to be consolations that are made and adaptations that have to be made. And that's the point of this series. I'm going to try to help you with that. This will just be the jiu-jitsu version, but the other versions will be coming as well. So first thing, we'll start just from the ground up. So for your first class, when you walk in, what to expect or what's expected of you or things that'll make your first class go smooth. So like for your first class, when you walk into the door, we'll just start there. You want to show up early for your first class. Why do you want to show up early? So most gyms, after you're a student and you are a student, you've been training there for 2-3 weeks plus, 3 months, you can show up 5-10 minutes before class. You know, if you're running for Phoenix MMA, if you're running a few minutes late, it's okay. We're not going to punish you. Some gyms will like do body shots, like punch you to the body or kick you to the body, leg kicks. They'll actually punish you, or some gyms will punish you with push-ups, something like that, being late. We don't do that at Phoenix MMA. I don't do that. And the reason why is people are adults, people are professionals. And of course, you need to be responsible and make your schedule according, but you can't schedule in. There's a car wreck, or, you know, maybe you have a high stress job. That's like a high stakes, high stress job. Sometimes it's going to cause you to have to work a little extra overtime, or, you know, things are going to happen depending on your profession. Now, for our younger people that I say our young bucks that have more free time, you want to make sure that you're showing up to class on time. Don't show up late. The reason why instructors will implement punishments for people being late is because students will start to purposely show up late to skip the warm-up drills, and that's going to be a bad thing. One, it makes the whole class just kind of run funky and kind of not run smooth. But two, by skipping, if especially the more advanced students, when you skip the warm-ups, then the beginning students will also want to skip warm-ups, and then the whole thing devolves. It's not a sustainable practice. But the real reason why you don't want to skip the warm-ups is they're going to significantly lower the percentage of you getting injured. Okay, so if you skip warm-ups, you're going to be colder, you're not going to be loosened up, and your reaction time is going to be slower as well, and then that's a recipe for injuries of all types. So the warm-up drills are also basic. I actually had a student that brought up to me the other day that they were not comfortable doing a front roll, and have been training for enough time to be comfortable doing a front roll, but also skips the warm-ups. And it's like the front roll as a warm-up is to get you warm, get you loose, stretch you out, lower the chance for injury. But it's also an important skill. There's going to be times where you're going to get drop sign-augied, and you're not going to have time to think about the front roll. So you have to really do thousands of them. So when the day comes that somebody does throw you through the air, you will instinctually, without having to think, because it's going to be half a second, you're going to be thrown through the air in half a second, you'll have to instinctually front roll. And if you're not doing those every single day that you practice, you're not going to build up that autopilot response. And when you need to front roll, you're going to fall straight onto your head and your face, and that's going to hurt. But for your first class, show up early. The reason why, you got to fill out a basic waiver, just like all gyms. If you go to a rock climbing gym, you go to a weightlifting gym, you have to fill out a waiver. MMA gyms are no different. So waiver form's not intense or long, but you still got to show up early. The next step is going to be that you're, you know, get shown around the gym where the restrooms, locker room, et cetera, the mat space, the class space. And then there will be an explanation or instruction of the basic warm-up drills that are going to, that we're going to use for the beginning of a practice. And this is, I'm going to specifically give you Phoenix MMA's policies and give you an advantage. So if you're a new student training with us, but this will also be pretty universal. There will be slight adjustments depending on the gym. But there is a kind of an industry standard where things are pretty similar wherever you go. So if you're, you know, if you're training with us, Phoenix MMA, but you go on vacation and you're in Italy or something, you could use the same template at a gym in another country, and you won't be too far off base. They might have slight adjustments, but you'll be pretty close to it, and you'll enjoy your practice even if you're, you know, on vacation going somewhere else. Bonus, if you're a brand new student and you want to this would be bonus practice that you could do. If you really want to prep for your first class, you could research, and by research, just use YouTube. It's easy and it's free. You could research the front roll, back roll, hip escape, and hip escape to knees. So if you look those up, they're on YouTube for free. You can actually practice all of those warm-up drills, all of those movements at home without injuring yourself. You just need a little bit of space. but you would be way ahead. You're ahead of the game if you research those before you come into a practice. Or this is another thing too that I'd really suggest. New students will come in and, you know, we're going to do those warm-up drills, front roll, back roll, hip escape to knees. And I'll notice all the time that students, like, say they've only been training for 2 or 3 weeks, and every time the warm-up drills come around, they really have a hard time with the hip escape or the hip escape to knees or back roll, whatever it is. But before class, we'll show up 10 or 15 minutes early to class and we'll socialize. There's nothing wrong with socializing. It's awesome. It's cool. That's a big part of training, is that you're actually getting to interact with other people. And especially the last year, year and a half, social interaction is at a premium. It's really important right now. But if you know that you're having a hard time with your hip escape or your hip escape to knees or back roll, any of these warm-up drills, instead of socializing, just for, you know, if you focus on it your next 5 or 10 practices during that free time, instead of just stretching out or just kind of sitting or talking, just drill those before the warm-up, before the class begins. And then, you know, I promise within like 5 days of you doing that, you'll then have all those warm-up drills down pat. You'll have less anxiety when it's your turn in the line to do the warm-up drills. And then you can go back to the, you know, the pre-practice, pre-class socializing, and you'll be able to enjoy it more because you won't have any stress of, you know, holding up the line on the warm-up drills. So have that all the time. I notice people have difficulties with the warm-up drills, but they don't utilize that time to practice the warm-up drills when there's no pressure on them because they're not in the line, in the line drill. So next one, big one, don't walk on the mat with shoes, okay? Something that'll save you a lot of time. If you just buy a pair of flip-flops or slides, it'll make your life easier for every MMA gym. Now, I understand some people are getting off work and, you know, you're wearing boots or dress shoes, whatever it is, that's fine. So lots of people just pack it in their gym bag. So their gym bag is preloaded. It's in their backseat of their car. You know, you get off work, then you go there, and you could honestly, in your car, take off your shoes, put on your slides or flip-flops. And yeah, people in the parking lot might think that you look funny with slacks and a button-up and a tie wearing flip-flops. But again, other people's opinion in the parking lot, people's opinion doesn't really matter. And a good number of the people that are in the parking lot are coming to train in the gym anyway, so they know what would be going on. But if you have time, it's just way easier because you don't have to untie your shoes, walk on the mat barefoot, and then once you get back off the mat, then if you want to go to the bathroom, locker room, then you have to relace up your shoes or retie your shoes. It's just, it'll save you a lot of time to use flip-flops or slides. Because on the mat, you want to be barefoot. Off the mat, and think anytime you're off the mat, so you're up, you know, you're just not on a matted area. If you're on the concrete or where the general public walks with their tennis shoes, that's where we want to put some type of footwear on, flip-flops or slides. So that would be, you know, not the matted area. And also the bathroom, locker room, all that good stuff. So that's where all the majority of the dirt and traffic's going to be. So, you know, if you step off with your bare feet and then step back on the mat, kind of defeating the purpose of us at Phoenix MMA, we clean the gym. At least we spray the mats, disinfect the mats 4 times a day. On a normal class day, 4 times a day, and that's to cut down on the amount of bacteria, germs, staph, ringworm, all that good stuff. But you know, you can stepping off like where all the dirt is kind of, you know, defeats the purpose. And and of course, you can't kill all germs, can't kill all bacteria. You're just trying to mitigate the how much there is. So, and the other thing with shoes or dress shoes, especially your heels, somebody stepped on our mats and just put a hole straight through the floor, through the mat, is it'll damage the mats, and the mats are pretty expensive. So don't step on the mat with shoes, barefoot on the mat, and also that, like, you don't want to wear socks. Socks are going to slip on you. Everybody's a bit self-conscious about their feet, so don't worry. Like, you're you know, everybody's in that club. Everybody thinks their feet are ugly or stinky, so it's fine. Don't worry about it. The nice thing is we always have hand sanitizer on the side of the mat for the if you're conscious about the smell of your feet. We got the hand sanitizer. You can squirt it on the mat. You hit your feet with it. You know, you just rub your feet on it. So that way, you know, you just killed all the germs and infections off of your feet. And if you've been in socks all day because you've been in an office or, you know, working or something, people will appreciate it when you're going for an armbar triangle and your feet are close to their face. At least it'll smell like hand sanitizer instead of like, you know, just feet smell what they smell like when they've been in a shoe all day or in socks all day. Yeah, so the biggest thing is we're trying to lower the chance of ringworm and staph, those annoying skin infections. Next one is, so what you want to do once you start class is follow the class, observe, have fun, understand. First thing is understand that it's impossible to learn everything your first week or your first month. I get this all the time where people ask me, you know, in a month, how good will I be? And I don't want to burst anybody's bubble. It's like, it's not like a Rocky movie or, you know, Karate Kid where there's a training montage. And then after the training montage, you defeat the guy who's like the evil villain who has tons of training. He's really good. And, you know, after a month and a training montage, all of a sudden you're this deadly weapon. If you have zero experience, you from a month from now, you should be able to beat yourself. Like, you should have a significant advantage over yourself in a fight. But a month, it's like, spoiler alert, you're not going to get good at anything in life in a month. Like, not a video game, not painting, not jujitsu, not boxing. It doesn't exist. The tricky thing is the world, the current culture, and it's just how companies make money. But how companies make money is they don't tell you that. They don't tell you that truth. And some martial arts schools will even do that, where they'll tell you, you know, in 60 days, 90 days, you'll be deadly, or 30 days. They're just lying to you, and they're taking money from you. Lots of times those martial arts gyms are going to be your traditional style, like, say, karate or taekwondo or even Krav Maga. It's usually the ones that will promise the biggest things about how deadly you'll be. You'll notice that they're going to have very little sparring in the program, because sparring is what exposes you. So if they're telling you, if they're telling you, hey, we're going to make you a deadly weapon, and then they actually get you to spar, you will realize that you're not a deadly weapon, and you'll say, hey, this is a sham. So what lots of times what they'll do is people get nervous to spar, so they're happy if the authority figure tells them, no, you don't need to spar actually to get good, all you need to do is drill. So they're more than happy to shell out the money, pay for their membership, and be told they're a deadly weapon, and then avoid the sparring. But so just notice that if you hear that, and that's universal, it's the same thing. If you see like a diet pill and it's saying like, oh, you'll lose 20 pounds in 30 days, it's either lying. I've worked at GNC and Vitamin Shop, and it, like, been into supplementation for over 15 years. In my experience, any supplements, if they promise you a huge return like that in a short amount of time, either one, it's just a lie, it's just a fabrication, or two, even with the diet pill example, even if there is something that could cause you to lose that amount of weight in that short of time, you would not want it. It would be so bad for your heart. that it will cause heart damage. And so you could look at like Adderall or meth or cocaine. Like those things will cause you to lose weight in a short amount of time, but they're going to cause serious damage to your heart. So usually that's how it goes. But yeah, just understand ahead of time that you're not going to learn everything in a week. You're not going to learn everything in a month. And for your first class especially, just go with the flow. Just follow it. Just go with the flow. Follow the class, lesson plan. And it's okay if you don't understand everything. The gym culture that we have is we work hard to maintain it. It needs to be a competitive environment, but it also needs to be a cooperative, helpful environment because no one's good when they first walk in. We need both. We need our sparring partners to spar with us really hard. Like what I mean by hard is like we need to, it needs to be like you have a couple people in the gym where one day you get them, then the next day they get you. You need that because you need that pressure to actually get better. But at the same time, when you are in a learning phase or like a beginner phase in a subject, you need that cooperation where your partner's helping you out during the drilling time or, you know, you're talking about stuff after sparring, like, hey, how'd you hit that move? That is how we will all improve and get as a gym and as a team. That's how we'll get better at the fastest rate where everybody is, you know, troubleshooting together and helping out. Again, if you put somebody down when they're at a low experience stage, that really doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help you by putting them down. And it also doesn't help them because they just don't know. If someone's ignorant or something, they just don't know. And if you know something about something, does it make you better than them as a person? It just means that you have knowledge of the subject. You know, everybody is a fool in some subjects. So just depends on if you're in that spot. So but overall, for the team and the gym to progress at the fastest rate, we actually need that cooperation where you're helping out your training partners. You're trading information, you're sharing techniques, but we also, the other side is we actually need to beat each other. We need to submit each other. We need to take each other down, sweep, pass guards. We need to actually beat each other because that's going to hone each other's skills. If someone finds out your technique and they find a counter to it, that is going to force you to develop a new technique to counter the counter. And then they will counter that. So the gyms and the teams that get really good have that type of atmosphere where they are not letting each other beat each other, but at the same time, they're working. Now we'll go to, okay, so now that's going to segue us into mindset. The mindset when you go in, if you're a new student or even if, you know, you're sometimes hearing beginner lessons or strategies is good. Like I still listen to stuff that I've listened to maybe 10 years ago. I'll re-listen to it and it re-teaches me the lesson. It's there, but sometimes you need to be reminded. So even if you have experience, this part will be good for you. The mindset section. And when you're starting MMA gym from a jiu-jitsu perspective. So you want to, when you first start, just think, listen, watch, follow the lesson plan, okay? The strategy I would suggest is follow the lesson plan first, and then second, question everything internally, okay? So this is the strategy that I've always used. I follow the lesson plan, and I've used it with everything. I've used it with wrestling, used it with jiu-jitsu, used it with boxing, used it with MMA, Muay Thai, the police academy, when I worked doing sales of supplements. Every environment, professional, social, culture, when I worked in nightclubs being a bouncer, worked in nightclubs being a bartender, because that's a culture itself, like learning how to navigate through that world. The nightclub world and the bar world is its own thing, the same way a jiu-jitsu gym or MMA gym or tournaments or MMA fights. This has been the strategy I've always used, and it works really well for me. And I think it's a strategy or a blueprint on how to learn a culture and environment really fast. So follow the lesson plan first, but still at the same time, so it's like you have to follow the you have to listen to the teacher or the instructor. So follow the authority figure. Follow their instruction. You are paying them for a reason. You're hiring them for a reason. You are saying, I'm a student. I'm trying to learn what's going on. So follow the authority position because they have more experience. They have more knowledge. They have more training. That's the reason why you're going to them to learn. Okay. But at the same time, don't be an absolute clone or like an absolute sheep and just drool forward and like not think or just charge forward. At the same time, question everything, but question it internally and question it second. So secondary. First, primary, follow the lesson plan of the class, the instructor. Secondary, question everything internally. So what an example of what this could be. It could be a guillotine choke. Say the lesson is a guillotine choke. The instructor gives the explanation on how to do the guillotine choke from a front headlock position. So the guillotine, you're sitting to a modified closed guard, butterfly and closed guard to attack with the guillotine. The instructor then explains that. Now, what you want to do is when you partner up to drill, you want to perform the repetition of that scenario. What the instructor is doing when they're teaching you that is they're teaching you a common high percentage scenario that you're going to run into in jiu-jitsu. And what you want to do is when you partner up, you want to drill that position, you want to drill that submission with your partner. You want to get as many repetitions as possible because it's a high percent, it's high likelihood you're going to run into that scenario. That's the reason why the instructor put it in the lesson plan. That's the purpose for it. So just because you've seen something, heard something, and you do it 2-3 times does not mean that you know it, okay? Like if you want a truer definition or a more harsh stricter definition of knowledge when you have to be able to embody something. So lots of people can parrot things out and they can say things, but until you can embody it and you can actually act it out, you don't actually know the technique. So you, at the beginning, you do have to mimic and you do have to parrot. That's the drilling. You just have to repeat. Eventually, after enough repetitions, you will carve your neural pathways deep enough in your brain to where you will be able to do that technique under stress in a short amount of time and without thinking that much about it. At that point, you actually know the technique. Now, that's going to take, there's not an exact number. For some people, it takes 300 reps. Some people, 500 reps. Some people, 2,000 reps. I will give you a tip. When it comes to world champions, lots of techniques that they do, they have in the thousands of repetitions, okay? So like a black belt in jiu-jitsu, an arm bar from the closed guard, if that's one of their main, we'll say Felipe Andrew, he has a really good explosive triangle choke from guard. There's a good chance that he's probably drilled that, I don't know, 5,000, 8,000, 20,000 times, and still as a black belt, still drills it and still works the technique. All skills depreciate over time. And the thing that people don't realize is it takes way more repetitions to actually master something than you expect. It's in the thousands. It's not in the hundreds. It's in the thousands of repetitions. Now, while you're drilling the technique, you want to question internally. So you want to be thinking out in your head. You do want to be thinking in your head, okay, what happens if they turn this side? What happens if they turn to the opposite side? What if they front roll? What if they back roll? What if my arm starts to give out? So you want to drill the technique and get it to where it's autopilot, but you also want to mentally drill and think about other things that are going to chain together to that technique. The thing I've noticed that a lot of people that have a hard time learning or a slower rate of learning or mastery when actually, so they'll do the class fine, but when it comes to sparring, they have a really hard time putting the techniques together. They'll say to me lots of times, man, I'm having a hard time where like in the match, I think about the move, but then I'm 2 seconds late or I'm 3 seconds late. Well, that's lots of times what I've noticed is people have that in reverse order where they question first. Their primary thing they do is they question. So I'll teach a technique. We'll say ready, break with the partner. Before they've even done 10 repetitions on it, they'll start breaking down the technique. Well, if the guy does this, then you can't do it. Or if the guy does that, you can't do this. Or if they do this, you can't do that. Well, of course, there are a limitless number of scenarios, blocks, reversals. It's unlimited. It's unlimited. But the problem with questioning externally as your first thing you do is you're not laying the foundation. Again, this is the reason why the instructor has created the lesson plan the way that they have is to teach you the high percentage, high probability situations and scenarios that are going to happen in a match. So because you're questioning the high percentage, the thing that's going to happen in a match, because you're questioning it, Instead of drilling it, you're not actually physically getting good at it. Now, it's kind of like if an 8-year-old was to ask you why all of the rules of driving, all the traffic laws are there, like every individual law. Why are there red lights? Why are there green lights? Why are there, why is this speed limit 40 miles an hour? If you take the time to fully explain, well, this one is why is this speed limit 40 miles an hour? Why is this one 55 miles an hour? It's like at the very beginning, 8-year-old is a bad term, we'll say 15 or 16, when you're first learning how to drive, it's like at the beginning, you just need to learn to follow the speed limit. If it's 45, go 45 or 43 or 40. That's the pace that you're at. Now, let's say you're 3 years into driving and then you want to have a conversation. Well, why is this speed limit set at 45? Why is this speed limit set at 30? Then you can have more of a detailed explanation and understand, well, it's due to the angle and also this road has a propensity to flood at a higher rate than other roads. This one as well, as it's the grade or the slope that it's going down at, your speed will naturally increase. So they had to mitigate it and they had to drop it by 15 miles an hour. Or this one is a quarter mile from a school zone, even though you can't see the school zone. So lots of times there's kids running around. There are so many variables and factors that it is good once you have knowledge in a subject to go deeper into it. But trying to go deep into a subject that you don't know anything about, and what I mean by know anything about is, you know, it's your first 2 years training or 3 years training. You're still in the beginner phase, the first 2 or 3 years, believe it or not. And if you go again, you want to question everything. What I mean by internally also is, you know, for study when you're studying at home, or you know, even open mat time, like that's a good time to go over stuff. But when it comes to lesson plan, when you first start, you got to start out by following the lesson plan, trust your instructor's lesson plan, trust the drilling, the techniques that are there, because you only have about 5 to 7 minutes per technique to drill. So if you ask the instructor, you know, a super complex question about the technique, like if you ask me, I will take the time to explain it. Most instructors won't, actually. Lots of them won't. I'll take the time to explain it. The problem is, if you ask me a super complicated question, lots of times it's going to take several minutes for me to explain it. And by the time I finish explaining it, I'll give you an in-depth answer. But by the time I get finished with the in-depth answer to the question that requires an in-depth answer, there's not a simple answer to it. Then your drilling time's all over. Now it's ready to go for the other technique. So you didn't get to drill that, but even worse, your training partner didn't get to drill it. And with this, I'm not saying to not troubleshoot with your partner. Troubleshoot with your partner, that's a really important part. Work with it, but at the same time, your primary focus should be drilling the lesson plan that's being taught. There's a purpose why it's there. Like me, I started training in 2002. So all of my lesson plans, when I'm teaching them, I'm trying to save all of my students years, months and years of their life on things that I failed at. And I've spent thousands of dollars on seminars and traveling and tournaments and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to get it. So anyway, let's see. Yeah, the questioning everything first and then doing second is often it's the mistake of people who are talkers and not doers. Not always, but lots of times. If you know anybody who talks about stuff all the time but they never do anything, you know, that's one of those where when you talk about it a whole bunch, it feels like you were accomplishing it or doing the thing, but you actually weren't. Like you could straight up go Forrest Gump mode, like Forrest Gump jiu-jitsu style, and you could get pretty good. Where, you know, like Forrest Gump, he just, whatever he starts to do, he just does it and he focuses on it and he just single-mindedly works on it and puts the reps in. And Jenny is always seeking that new thing. She's always seeking like instant gratification and quick. She's trying to find the secret and constantly jumping around. If you come from a weightlifting perspective, you could think of it like this. It'd be like constantly bouncing around from doing one set of biceps and one set of chest, one set of calves. And you're like, man, I can't build any muscle. Why am I not building muscle? It's like, well, you're constantly hopping around. Same thing with the jiu-jitsu technique. There's a takedown. There are two techniques right now that I've been working on for the last year. And I know that's super hardcore, to pick two moves to drill for an entire year, but the longer, the more technical the move is, and the longer you get into it, the longer your training cycles be on the technique. So it might seem weird to spend the whole class drilling just two different moves, but trust me, once you get deep enough, like I worked on my Darce choke for 2 years. I worked on my Darce choke for 2 years, troubleshooting it. My instructors just didn't have the knowledge to give me the explanation I needed. So I was researching, watching instructionals, watching YouTube, reading books, trying and watching the World Championships, and it still took me 2 years of adjustments to get the Darce that I've got. So when I teach a Darce in class, I try to wrap up that whole 2 years that I spent trying to get it, fine tune it, and then I try to give it to my students as a finished product or a better version than what I got. Sorry, my notes are jumping around just a little bit. Okay, next one is during the instruction, you want to listen and quote hold the air end quote during the instruction. During the instructional process. So during the class, like during the instruction, it's not a weird thing of like, hey, be quiet. The instructor, the teacher, the master is explaining. It's just so that the model will actually work. The class will actually flow. And I understand that when you're excited and you're enthusiastic, like you want to add or you want to ask a question in the middle of the instruction or right at the end of it. It's still good to ask related questions to that technique. Just do it. You know, we always do the instruction. Then we say 1, 2, 3. Everybody claps, get in sync. Then we partner up with our partner and we go and drill. At that time, flag down your instructor, your coach. Wave them down, flag it down. And then ask, you know, if you got something about the technique, like a related question, like, hey, are you gripping the bottom of your hand or were you gripping the top of your hand? Was it an S grip? Was it a gable grip? You know, just because if it goes to a completely open Q&A, and seminars will have that as part of it, but they'll usually schedule in an allotted 30 or 45 minutes for a Q&A session. But a class is only an hour and a half long. We just don't have enough time to do an open Q&A. But when you break into groups, that's the appropriate time to flag down your instructor, your coach, and ask a related question to that technique about, you know, a specific grip or something. I understand seeing being explained the move 5 to 10 minutes and seeing it be performed 3 to 5 times, you're not going to get all the details. So still ask questions, but, you know, just flag down your instructor just so everybody can get to work drilling, and then the instructor can bounce around group to group. Okay. Next, now we're going to go to culture, all right? Okay, we're 37 minutes in, so I got to get on it so we can get done with this. There's a lot still to cover. So culture, this is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with MMA gym. Culture, these are a lot of things that you're not going to be able to read about in a book. There's probably some YouTube videos somewhere that are explaining things, but we'll get it going. So again, this is going to apply to most gyms, specific to Phoenix MMA, the way that we run our gym, but it'll help you with other gyms as well. Some have little adjustments, of course. So for jiu-jitsu class and Muay Thai class, we bow on and off the mats. Okay, it's not a huge like religious thing or something like that. All it is when you bow on the mat, you're just acknowledging like, okay, I'm here to work. I'm here to be respectful to the instructor, to my training partners. I am acknowledging that when I step on the mats, you know, I have a social life, I have a professional life, I have all these things, but I'm setting those to the side for a temporary little time to work on my craft, what I'm doing right now, and I'm going to be present and focus on my thing. It is a ritual to say, hey, I'm being present and I'm focusing on what's going on right now. You know, I'm not going to be, I'm trying to think, good example. You know, I'm not going to be throwing my, people don't throw their cell phone in the air, I'm trying to think. I'm not going to be throwing foam rollers at people or something like that, or you know, tripping people or something like that. When I'm here, you know, I'm focused on the class. That's the bow in, the bow out. When you're bowing out, it's like, all right, I'm all done with class. I'm all done with training. Sweet, cool. I'm back into normal life mode. We line up at the beginning and end of class based on belt rank. So the belt rank, if you will line up to the back line as white belt, and the back of the end of the line as well as a white belt. And the purpose for that is when you first start, you might not have the warm-up drills and the warm-up drills memorized, so you can follow the people that are a higher rank than you, more skilled, so that you are they have more experience, so that you can copy them. So the first couple months, you don't have to have all the drills memorized. You're following all the more senior students, and then the senior students, there is more responsibility on you, because the more beginner students are going to follow your lead and copy what you're doing. And as you progress, your belt rank, you will go up the line for white belt, blue belt, purple belt. Some people think this is a needless thing. We utilize it at Phoenix MMA. The reason why, I've seen some gyms, they just do a single line and it just wraps around the entire gym. So one, you run out of space really quick when you do that. But two, when I was coming up through the ranks, white belt, blue belt, I couldn't wait to be at the head of the white belt line. I was so excited. I couldn't wait to get to the blue belt line. I couldn't wait to get to the purple belt line. So this is actually, there's some psychology and neuroscience that backs up this being actually a good practice. As long as your community and the culture is not putting down people that are a lower rank or lower skill than them, then you're solid. Because what happens is, we crave our brains and humans. We crave dopamine. We crave rewards, and a lot of the rewards that we usually would get through nature, like hunting or whatever you're doing, accomplishments, things like this, are we no longer get because there's grocery stores. You know, everything is at our fingertips practically. So there are not a lot of the important ritualized things in the world that humans have always had and behaviors that we have always had day to day to live that would give us a good source of natural dopamine and natural serotonin. A lot of those things are gone. And for dopamine and serotonin, achieving difficult things are going to give you a healthy stream of it. And as you progress and you rank up and you move up the line and you move up from the white belt to the blue belt line, those are going to give you a healthy, natural reward of dopamine and serotonin. So it's actually healthy for your brain, and it's healthy for where you are in a community to actually be able to see and see your what it is that you can see yourself progress. Okay, you actually get a stream of happy dopamine related happiness by setting a goal, and then as our brain observes us moving towards that goal, we get a stream of dopamine. Now, if you don't have something like that in your life, your brain will still seek it. It will just seek it through drugs, like caffeine, tobacco, cigarettes, sugar, alcohol, weed, video games, sex. All those things will give you a bump of dopamine. But because they're not natural, especially when it comes to the substances, you'll have a big come down after it, and you'll feel terrible. Everybody's probably experienced that before, so that's why we a short little reason why we still align it by the belt rank. Be cool and respectful to everyone in the room. You can't treat people in a jiu-jitsu gym or MMA gym like you would treat, I hope you don't do this, but lots of people do. Like if you treat the waiter or waitress, like when you're mad at them, how you're mean to them, you talk down to them and stuff, that's not going to fly in an MMA gym. Treat everybody cool and with respect, and it'll be given back to you. And if you are treating them, again, I don't think you should. I think it's a bad character trait when people treat, service staff people in a bad way. It lets me know that they've never worked in a job like that. Maybe they were born, they had a lot of money, but if just spoiled. But if you behave that way, it's not going to fly in an MMA gym. You'll find out real quick. It's not going to work. But just be cool and respectful, and everybody will do the same to you. Practice. This is the thing about the gym. Like, this is one of the cool things about martial arts gyms, about MMA gyms. This is one of the coolest things about it. There's a lot of, there are a lot of things in the world. I'd say there's actually not a lot of things in the world that are like this, where there are, churches are like this as well. universities, or there are certain institutions, and there are certain places where, like, maybe it's 2,000 square feet, but in that 2,000 square feet, everyone who steps into that building or that area decides that the reason why we're coming here is for a good purpose, and we are going, everybody that's here, we're going to all decide that we're going to practice these principles, and we're going to work on these things. Practice courtesy, respect, honor, humility, bravery. Think of like an MMA gym. It's kind of like a hallowed ground. Like everybody, when they come in, is agreeing that, hey, we're going to punch each other, we're going to kick each other, we're going to slam each other, we're going to throw each other, we're going to choke each other, but we are practicing these good principles of human beings that are difficult to acquire and are difficult to maintain. But everybody that steps in, we are all choosing, we are making a decision that each person is going to focus on these. You will make mistakes, but you will make mistakes and you fail at those things. It's going to happen sometimes, but make the commitment. That's going to be your mindset when you come in. If you want to, if you don't want to do that, then go back out into the chaotic world. Go downtown into the bar and club scene and act the way you want to act there, or go back on the social media world like Twitter, Facebook, where it's just a dumpster fire all the time, and you do that, and you just be part of the problem and part of the chaos. But when you're coming to an MMA gym or a martial arts school, you're trying to actually, you're trying, the human project, personal and as a collective, you're trying to actually be a net positive on the human project, yourself and as a collective. In the gym, we have people from all nationalities, all ethnicities, all religions, all professions, and you'd be amazed when you have the correct culture and everybody is saying, hey, this is what I'm going to come into this with, this is my decision I'm making. It's crazy how people can coexist. They are literally punching each other and kicking each other and have different political, religious viewpoints, come from different cultures, different parts of the world. And because they have the social contract of agreeing that we're going to practice all these behaviors that we know are good for humans to behave and to acquire as a human or as a person, a part of your personality. It's actually really, really cool. Last year was one of the most chaotic years in the United States. And the gym, like our gym, we held it together. Everybody was cool. So thank you everybody that did that. Yeah, it's actually awesome. But if you're a brand new student, just know that going in, like, don't talk down to people. If you talk down to people, like, we're gonna fight pretty soon. You're gonna shake hands, and I'm not saying like a street fight. It's like that's what everybody's there for. They all like to fight. So, anyway, next one. When you lose, don't punch the mat, don't cuss, don't scream, it's going to be hard. Sometimes you just have to internalize it and be quiet. You will get frustrated. It's all right. Everybody gets frustrated. You got to practice holding it together though, when you're losing. And I'm not telling you to be emotionless or anything. You know, Ronda Rousey's actually famous for, she would say she'd go out to her car and cry after practice. You know, when she was, some people who are really hard on themselves usually have that reaction. They're really hard on themselves when they're losing. I hope this helps out for you to understand that there's a fallacy that people think that the best in the world, like, don't get tapped or submitted. Craig Jones, I've seen Craig Jones in training videos get leg locked. I've seen Gordon Ryan get knee barred in training videos. Every black belt I know gets submitted. If they're actually going against good training partners, they get submitted, consistently. When it comes to jiu-jitsu, the sport is too difficult and too complex for even the current world champion to go week by week without getting submitted or without getting beaten. It doesn't happen. There's too many pieces. There's too many variables. I don't follow basketball, so I don't know if, like, LeBron James just gets it handed to him some days at practice. I never played basketball. I don't understand the sport well enough, but I do understand jiu-jitsu well enough that if you, let's say right now, no-gi Gordon Ryan is the best jiu-jitsu practitioner. I can show you training footage of one of his training partners that's 50 pounds lighter than him, knee barring him. There are too many openings. There are too many attacks. Now, when it comes to game day, you're playing your A game and you're fully rested and your mindset's in. But when it comes to the gym, black belts consistently get submitted. World champions get beat and submitted or get guards passed. The only difference is they just have been beaten so much at white belt, blue belt that when it happens at black belt, it's just part of the process. And also just don't take it personally. If somebody submits you, it's okay. They worked really hard to get that submission. They had to think it through. They had to drill thousands of reps. It's like, all right, good stuff. Like, kudos to you. You worked hard. You got something cool. You let me know. You exposed something that I need to work on. What I just said, that is much easier said than done. Okay, when you first start, you're gonna want to. Some people are gonna get really frustrated when they, get submitted or beat. But just know, Everybody gets beat consistently in practice. So now we'll go through this one, and we'll rattle through some quick ones. If you're not sparring, a tip I would give is watch the upper belts roll. And you want to mimic their movement style. Even if you don't understand the techniques, watch the upper belts roll, mimic their movement style. These are other rules, basic rules. Don't eye gouge. This is for jiu-jitsu, for Brazilian jiu-jitsu rules. Don't eye gouge. Don't strike. Jiu-jitsu, you're not striking. You're not punching or elbowing. Don't bite. Don't scratch. No small joint manipulation. That means don't grab single fingers or toes, stuff like that. You have to grab the whole hand or wrist. Don't grab individual fingers. Don't neck crank. A neck crank is a submission where the intention of it is to damage the spine or neck. There are chokes like a darce or a guillotine that there is going to be a neck crank aspect, but that's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about the trying to rotate. You're trying to do it all. The only purpose for what you're doing could damage the neck, the spine. It's not going to choke your opponent. Don't try to crush the trachea. Don't grab the trachea and try to crush or squeeze that trachea. Depends on each gym, but with us, I mean, most gyms are like this when you first start. No twisting leg locks until you're cleared. So the gym, we allow white belts to do straight ankle locks and straight knee bars. So you got to check with each gym that you go to. Some gyms won't let white belts do ankle locks at all. A lot of gyms won't let white belts do knee bars. We allow straight ankle locks and knee bars. The twisting submissions, you'll have to be cleared for those. That's heel hook, toe hold, esteema lock. You have to be cleared for those until you have enough control of your application of submissions. And what that means is you should not be exploding on your submissions. It should be a gradual increase of force. So think start at a 60% pressure exertion rate, then 70%, 80%, 90%. If you're going 0 to 100, that's not a sustainable model. We're gonna injure each other all the time, so don't do that. No slamming. You can pick people up, but you can't slam in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. When you get to professional level, there are tournaments that you're allowed to slam. And of course, in MMA, you can slam. But in the practice room, even if you're getting ready for a fight, don't slam your partner because we'll just get too many concussions and neck or spinal injuries. You can pick people up, but you can't slam. And in amateur Jiu-Jitsu tournaments, if you slam somebody, you're going to get disqualified. There's no warning. You just get disqualified. And it's to cut down on concussions and spinal injuries. Use your mat space. Don't randomly explode into other. So use your mat space. We have our mat space clearly marked with lines. So the biggest thing is like keep your match in your mat space. If you notice that you're going out of bounds, hit the mental pause button. Both of you scoot back to the center, shake hands, go again. You restart in the same position. Exploding out of bounds is not an escape. So if you go out of bounds, you go back to the center and you restart in the same spot. So exploding onto the floor, the concrete, out of an armbar is not an escape. You scoot right back in the same position. And also, like, you're not the center of the universe, so pay attention to your surroundings. Look around. Don't roll into the group beside you because we'll injure each other if we fall on top of each other. So that does mean that you need to probably, for the first year of your training, you need to slow down. Increase your breathing, slow your movement down, and pay attention to your situational, your spatial awareness, the people around you. Don't just randomly explode in a direction if you don't know if you can go that way. If you don't know it's there, you will have to think about what you're doing and think about where you're going. So the next one, don't roll into a near bad group. That's the same thing. You know, if you have to do a move going to the left, if the move you want to do forces your body to move to the left side, but when you step to the left 2 feet, you'll step into the group beside you. The answer is you can't do that move to the left. You have to instead do a move straight forward into your opponent or to the right. So you have to think about your options and adjust. But the same thing is going to happen for a tournament. There's not limitless mat space. Same thing's gonna happen for an MMA fight because you're gonna have ring or cage. There's not limitless mat space as well. And the same thing's gonna happen in a self-defense or a fighting situation in the real world. There are always gonna be boundaries or obstacles in a given area. It's very rare that you're gonna fight in a basketball size place where there's not gonna be any boundaries or any obstacles in the environment. So practice it right now in the gym, looking around, practicing spatial awareness and situational awareness. Don't demand people to move for you, okay? You're not the center of the world, so like this goes for drilling too, you know? Move and pay attention, look around, make sure you get enough space, and you know, move a little bit if you need to. Same thing if you're waiting for a sparring partner. All the time I'll say okay, you know, partner up or sparring, and you'll have two people standing on the mat 10 feet from each other, waiting for a partner. Just go ahead and meet one person, decide like, oh, I got you. You know, if there's two people on the mat waiting for partners, just look and say, oh, I got you, brother. You know, all right, I'm coming. And, and shake hands and go. But that happens all the time. I know that when it comes time to partner up for sparring, that it kind of gets awkward sometimes, and it's kind of like a middle school dance where everybody's nervous, they don't know who to partner up with, but if you're on the mat, if it's you and another person on the mat, both waiting for a partner, and you're both taking up two mat space, two places of mat space, just go over and meet with them, and you're both looking for a partner, so just shake hands. Oh yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, you're not the center of the universe. So I own Phoenix MMA. I'm the head coach, and I still move for people and say excuse me and slide to the side when I'm walking around. I don't, you know, the owner of the gym, and I don't walk around like thinking that everybody has to move for me. I'll still slide out of the way for walk through the hallway or the bathroom and still say excuse me or sorry about that if I, you know, bump into somebody. It's just basic courtesy stuff. Let's see. For sparring matchup with challenging opponents, people that are appropriate for you. So if you're a heavyweight, you probably want to spar with heavyweights as much as possible. If you're a lightweight, if you're 21 years old, you probably want to partner with people that are around your age, 16 to 25, like people that have the same VO2 max, the same energy cardio level that you have. Now there's going to be times where you are going to match up with somebody that's much smaller than you, much larger than you, or say you're 20 years younger than them. But with all those scenarios, you want to spar appropriately with them. So if you're 100 pounds heavier than somebody, be aware of your weight and be careful on how you apply your weight. If you're literally 25 years younger than somebody, then you could potentially slow your game down, work a more technical game, because when you're 25 years younger, your VO2 max is so much higher, your cardio is so much better, that you're not going to get good work if you just go super fast the whole time. But really, you should be trying to match up with your peers physically, technically, and age-wise. So physically goes to weight class and age. Don't be the heavyweight that's only, or the, you know, somebody's 225 or whatever, 200 pounds and up, and they're only going with the 140-pound, 15, 16-year-olds, the teenagers in the gym. You don't want to just pick easy matchups. Pick matchups that are going to challenge you, that you don't know necessarily that you're going to win. Don't avoid the appropriate matchups, we'll say. And if you're sparring with somebody that is someone's way smaller, you can use the Marcella Garcia strategy or the Craig Jones strategy. Watch both of them. Well, Marcella had an interview 15 years ago that I remember it from, but Craig Jones, he puts up a lot of sparring footage, and you can actually see the way he spars. There's plenty of times that he could submit his opponents. And what he'll do is he'll go to a technique. This is a normal thing with black belts. They'll, if a black belt's training with a white belt, they won't just submit them nonstop because then they don't get good work in. What they'll do is they'll get to a position of a submission, let the white belt work and work and escape so they get practice. But then as they escape that submission, they will then see practice on how to chain another submission or another technique to it. So that way you're getting advanced training. What happens if your opponent can escape your technique, and the lower skill level or the smaller person is also getting practice on their escapes. And so it's a win-win for both situations. But say you're like, hey, I want to have hard sparring rounds. I don't want to work with anybody. I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to like kind of, you know, work and just kind of flow roll or anything like that. I want hard matches. Then go with people around your age, around your weight, and around the same skill level as you, and you'll have hard matches every time, guaranteed. And we're back. All right. So now that was the 1 hour limit. So podcast is going longer than expected, but I hope you get good value out of this one. And especially if you're a new student, this is going to help you out. Or, you know, if you're still in the, you know, I honestly, there's people that have been training for 2 or 3 years that should listen to this, that should listen to this podcast. Or actually, I know some people that have been training for, don't feel bad, for 8 years, 10 years that need to listen to this one. All right. So, now we'll go to gear for, starting jiu-jitsu gym or MMA gym, and you're focusing on jiu-jitsu for gi. Or when it comes to gi training, you're going to want a Brazilian jiu-jitsu gi. Pretty simple. I'd probably recommend like a tape as well, like athletic tape, just for your fingers or your toes. Sometimes you're going to jam stuff. Yeah, that'd be really for gi Brazilian jiu-jitsu. All you need is a gi. And maybe tape for your, you know, fingers or toes, stuff like that would be good. That is, you need a Brazilian jiu-jitsu gi, not a judo or karate gi. People all the time will say, hey, why is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu gi so much more expensive than another one? They're more durable, and it's like a karate or a taekwondo uniform. No, you can't wear that for a Brazilian jiu-jitsu class. It will rip. Gis are made really durable. They're more expensive, but they'll last several years. You know, they're not going to rip on you. They're not going to tear. You have to use the gi and the uniform to submit your opponent with, choke, or hold them in place. And you're also going to hold your opponent in place with their gi, and you're going to choke them with their gi. And you'll have to be able to throw them with their uniform, with their gi. So yeah, it has to be a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gi. It also has to be a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gi because it has to be cut correctly. So the cut, the length of the pants, the length of the jacket, the sleeves, the skirt has to be Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Judo gis have a really high cut on the sleeves, like they're almost going halfway up the forearm. You won't be able to compete in one of those, and really you don't want to be training in one of those because it's just not what you're going to be able to compete in. It's not the correct uniform. During the free trial period, lots of gyms will have loaner gis. Like we have loaner gi jackets that we let you use during the free trial. We do a free week trial. Each gym slightly different. If you go to larger gyms, like say, you know, ALJ or Autos or something, they're not going to have a free loaner gi for you to use. I think you might have to rent a gi for the day for $40 or $30, something like that per day. You'll have to rent it. So yeah, you just want to get a gi. Make sure that you are wearing a clean gi for every practice. Gis get stinky bad or quickly, and they're pretty thick, so they hold a lot of germs and fungus, all that good stuff. So anytime that you train and you sweat in a gi really good, it needs to be washed. You need to be wearing a clean gi to practice. You can give somebody staph infection or ringworm by wearing dirty gear to practice. And also, nobody wants to drill or spar with the stinky dude, the stinky guy in the gym, where it smells like, you know, just not good. And really, when gis will get bad, they'll actually kind of start to get like an ammonia, a weird like ammonia smell, you know. So when you get done training, you need to wash your gi. Make sure you're always wearing a clean gi to practice. For no gi gear, you'll go over the stuff. So really what you'll want for no-gi, this will be your goal to get to, is you want rash, well, really what you want, rash guards for your upper body, rash guards for your upper body, and MMA or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu shorts for your lower body, also like board shorts, like surfing shorts work. What you don't want, basketball shorts are really the biggest problem. So you don't want basketball shorts, you don't want shorts with pockets, you don't want shorts with zippers, okay? So basketball shorts, the reason why you don't want zippers. You don't want zippers because zippers will scratch and cut your opponents as you're moving around. It will also damage the mats. So when you're moving around, zippers can damage the mats. The mats are expensive, and they can also scratch your opponent, cut them, scratch their face, their body, whatever. That's why you don't want zippers. You don't want pockets because your pockets people's feet, toes, fingers, hands can get stuck in the pockets, and that can cause a dislocation of toes or fingers. In wrestling practice, if you're wearing like a cotton shirt, it's usually required that you have to tuck the cotton shirt in so you don't have like a low-hanging shirt. It's so that people don't dislocate their fingers in a scramble when you're moving. Basketball shorts also don't have a supported waistband. So if you notice like when I was in high school, people thought it was a funny joke to come up and like pull somebody's shorts down in front of people to embarrass them. So that's the problem with basketball shorts. They don't have a supported waistband. If you get good MMA shorts or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu shorts, you're going to notice that it's going to have a strong waistband that usually has a Velcro strap, and then will also have a drawstring. So the whole purpose for that is to lower the chance of wardrobe malfunctions, where because you're going to be scrambling in awkward positions and people are going to be holding around your waist, you might be slipping and hip escaping out. And when you do that, if you have basketball shorts, your pants are going to fall down, your shorts are going to fall down. You could have an embarrassing moment, but even if you don't have anything embarrassing, it's just that, like, say, you know, whatever, you're wearing like compression shorts under it, those basketball shorts are going to go down around your ankles or around your knees, and they're just going to like bola you. They're like going to wrap up your legs, so you won't be able to move and spar. You're going to be handcuffed around your knees. So again, basketball shorts, you don't want to wear basketball shorts. MMA shorts, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu shorts, or board shorts are really what you're looking for. Now, when you first start training, there's more leeway. Like, say your first 6 months, I understand rash guards are expensive, MMA shorts are expensive. They're not the cheapest clothing. So, you know, when you first start, there's going to be some leeway. Most people wear basketball style shorts and like cotton shirts when they first start. But you just want to start getting your training gear, like slowly start adding your training gear, get your stuff together. Rash guards, the reason why it's suggested wear rash guards, and when you first go into a gym, you might see all these people wearing like really tight fitting, you know, you're like, oh, there's all these Under Armour shirts that are tight fitting. What's the deal? Why are all these people wearing this? It's not a fashion thing. Some people like it, of course. But one, you're going to breathe better. It's going to wick away moisture, so you're not going to get as hot. A cotton shirt, you'll overheat. You'll get much hotter in a cotton shirt. It holds more sweat. They stink more. It attaches more of a stinky smell to it. But the biggest thing is, again, when you're wearing a cotton shirt, for wrestling, it's normally you have to tuck that shirt into your shorts because you can get an injury. So the rash guards, they're very hard to hold on to or to get caught in a finger or toes. So it's a function as well. But of course, when you first start training, it's understandable that it's going to take a little bit to get all your training gear together. But the goal is you don't want to be wearing like basketball shorts and a tank top. That goes like this. I'll just say it, like basketball shorts, like for the, we have, this weekend, coming up, we have Cameron, Curtis, and Trey are fighting. They specifically, in the rules, have a rule against no basketball shorts. So just so you know, if you're wearing basketball shorts and you're going for a kickboxing bout or an MMA fight, the other corner is basically like, sweet, we're going to win. It makes you look like a scrub, basically, because you're not actually wearing the appropriate gear. And it's going to mess up the your ability to move when you're training. So again, I say that makes you look like a scrub, but for MMA rules, like amateur MMA, they have it specifically. Do not wear basketball shorts because everybody does it. And when you first start, you just don't know about, you know, what type of gear companies, MMA shorts or jiu-jitsu, rash guards, stuff like that. You don't know what to buy. So it's normal that you start out, but that's not the end result. We want to get past that. Tank tops also cause issues. For grappling, they're not good. If you see me wearing a tank top, just know I'm not training that day. I'm not planning on training. I'm just teaching. People's legs and arms will get tangled in tank tops because they have so much openings. Like I'm talking about, like a men's tank tops that are loose. Like like a arm will get stuck down. Like a leg will get stuck through. Most women's like tank top style, like rash guards or whatever, they're more tight fitting. So there's not like a huge gap or whatever. But a lot of men's tank tops are really loose. And the other thing with tank tops too, this is my personal thing. Why I don't do jiu-jitsu. I'll box and kickbox in tank tops, but I don't do jiu-jitsu with tank tops because your armpits are exposed. And if you're going for a choke or something, like I don't think anybody wants, if I'm trying to do a Munson choke, you don't want just, you know, you don't want to, you want to submit from the actual choke. You don't want, the reason why you're submitting is because someone's armpit hair is going in your mouth. There's tons of situations where the armpit could be close to somebody's face. And it's like, man, I'm not even submitting because it's a choke or anything, or I'm not giving up the guard pass because it's a choke. It's just because your armpit hair is going in my mouth or in my eyes, and it's nasty. So, but tank tops, like I said, functional, even off the hygiene thing, functionally, just now kickboxing and boxing, really, really not an issue because you're not putting your armpits in people's face on it. Because you're not pressuring down in a grappling context, like you're not playing like a spider guard or something like that when you're kickboxing or boxing, your foot is probably not going to get laced all the way through their shirt. So you're probably fine there. But it can cause some issues in jiu-jitsu. Next one, hygiene. So you want to be clean, showered, like bathed for every practice. Don't come to the gym where you haven't bathed that day or a previous day or since the last practice. That's disgusting. That's gross. You want to shower after each practice, as soon as you can. So, you know, when you get home, shower, clean up. If not, that's when you're going to get ringworm or staph infection, is if you don't shower after practice. Make sure that you're wearing clean gear to every practice, so that's your clothing. And we provide disinfectant spray for your gloves and shin guards after you get done with practice. We have it on the gym little window you can use. If you have to spit or vomit, do it in the bathroom, in the toilet, not in the main training room trash can. Some people, if someone's vomiting in the trash can, it will cause them to vomit just right away. And also, the trash can for our gym is right by the main mat, and that stomach acid will fill the entire room. Everybody will smell it. So, do your best to, go use the bathroom, use the toilet. It's easier to clean up, and it's easier to clean up, and everybody doesn't hear the audible and see it. And same thing spitting. Like, if you got to do that, just go use the bathroom. Now, of course, sometimes it's going to catch up on you really quick. We have several students that will vomit in practice because they're getting ready for fights or tournaments. And when they feel it coming, just so you know, you don't ever have to ask me. You can run straight to the bathroom. You can just run off the mat to the bathroom. Not a problem. But before that, especially as a beginner, this podcast is for beginners. Don't push to the point of vomiting. Don't push to that point. That's not a smart thing. That's high level competitors that are they're pushing to a level that when you first start, you can only imagine the level they're pushing to. We have hand sanitizer on the side of the mat for your feet. Already talked over that. Fingernails and toenails, make sure that your fingernails and toenails are trimmed so you don't slice everybody. We have fingernail clippers at the gym just in case if you forget, but you'll cut people up with your fingernails and toenails, so make sure that you have your nails clipped and your toes, all that good stuff, so you're not cutting people while you're sparring. If you have any type of infection, just stay home until it's cleared. So that would, of course, go for COVID. But honestly, MMA gyms and jiu-jitsu gyms are like this always. If you got a common cold, stay home. If you have the flu, if you anything that's going on, ringworm staff. Stay home until it's clear. Don't come, because if it's something that's contagious, you'll give it to everybody. So, and also, whenever you have something like that, like staph, or not staph, but the flu, or even the common cold, if you come train, you're going to tax your immune system, and it's going to make it harder for you to recover. So the best thing that you need to do at that time is just rest, but also don't get other people sick. And then the last piece is, we're wrapping it up, is don't be a statistic. Don't be a statistic and have fun. So the don't be a statistic is when I worked for the UFC gym, when I went for their corporate training in Orange County, California, they had a lot of interesting metrics that they had, data they had collected from the gym industry. The UFC gym is actually they're separate entities from the UFC itself. The UFC gym was actually a lot of the upper management or the previous upper management from a company called LA Boxing, and they were also upper management from Gold's Gyms, like big box fitness gyms, like weightlifting gyms, and they were the ones that had collected this data. But the American, the U.S. average for a gym membership from start to finish, the U.S. average, like how long does somebody start after they join, is, what do you think, drum roll, from their statistics, from, LA Boxing, Gold's Gym, Planet Fitness, those type of gyms, the American average is 2 months. I know, it's kind of sad. So the average person joins a gym and then quits going after 2 months. That's the American average. So it's probably telling on why we have some of the issues that we're having, is the 2 months is the average. 2 months, I understand it, because when you first start, you're just really enthusiastic, and then once you actually start doing something, you realize how it's more difficult. The actual practice itself is more difficult, but scheduling it into your life is difficult as well. And once that newness wears off after a couple months, that's when people stop. So just know the average is 2 months. If you've made it longer than 2 months, kudos to you. You are above the average for the American population. I would say with this, something that might help your perspective is just realize that learning jiu-jitsu is a long-term project. It's not going to come really fast. So, I've had several students that thought they were going to be really good. Actually, just about everybody that's ever told me they're a fast learner at jiu-jitsu turns out to not be a fast learner. Most of the time, they're actually, what's called an incompetent narcissist. But almost all the people that that are actual fast learners never consider themselves fast learners. They think they're average, and they actually learn really fast. Sometimes they think they're below average. There's a saying that winners work lazy people do a little bit of work and then are confused why they're not winning. And winners do as much work as possible and then still worry that they're not doing enough. So that one's pretty spot on. But just understand it's a long-term project. If you expect that you're going to be amazing after a month, you're going to be let down, because it's not going to be there. It's not going to be after a month. You're not going to be amazing. You'll think you're going to, so many people have this, where they think they're going to be amazing after a month. And I think that's maybe where the 2 month drop off comes, is they think they're going to be amazing, after a month, and then they're not. And then, 2, 3, 4 weeks later, they're like, okay, that's just it. I'm not a natural at this. This isn't my thing. I'm done. Spoiler alert, nobody's good in 1 or 2 months. If you put too much pressure on yourself in that way, you're going to burn yourself out. You're just going to discourage yourself. If you need to rest when you first start, your first 6 months, if you need to take a rest day, rest, it's okay. You got to build up to the get David Goggins, mode, and you can still go David Goggins mode if you want to. It's just on your rest day, study a film, study matches or instructionals. Remember that training's supposed to be a stress reliever, and it's supposed to be fun. If you need to ease back a little bit, ease back. If you need to take some rounds off some sparring and watch the sparring, that's fine. Ease back. It should be fun. Don't be beating yourself up too much, especially if you're not looking to do it professionally. You're doing it because you enjoy jiu-jitsu and you want to be able to protect yourself. you know, if you need to. Let's see. Don't compare yourself to the hardcore competitors / specialists. Every gym has a small population, maybe like 2% of the gym that's super hardcore. 2 to 5% of the gym super hardcore. They're specialists. They're competitors. Their goal is to be a professional competitor and or open up their own gym. They're structuring their entire life around jiu-jitsu, so don't compare yourself to those people. Like, say if you are a doctor, you had to spend years and years of specializing to become a doctor. They're doing the exact same thing. They're spending years and years, and they're organizing their entire life around jiu-jitsu so they can specialize in it. That's the same thing I did when I first started. I found out it was my thing. This thing I wanted to do was my professionally. It's what I wanted to do with my life. So I organized my entire life around it. You know, if a job didn't work where I couldn't train, I would, nope, job's not, it's not working, done, gone. If a relationship, like girlfriend, didn't like training, it's like, all right, cool, gone. Like, we just, and I would tell people up front, and I would also seek out jobs that would still allow me to train and wouldn't drain me too much physically. But again, that's for the specialist. That's somebody who wants to do this professionally. They want to open up a gym. They want to win a world championship. But if that's not your goal, make sure that you're not comparing yourself to that person. That person might be practicing 3 times a day. You're practicing 3 times a week. Still, like, spar with them. Like, get around with them. Spar with them. And you're the cool thing about jiu-jitsu is, like, you could have a training partner, one of your teammates that is that specialist. They could go win the world championships. And then on Monday, you get to spar with them. That's what I mean by that is, like, you can't do that with any other sport, really. Like, you can't play basketball with LeBron James if you want to. Like, you can't even show up to the practice. But when it comes to jiu-jitsu and MMA, there's always a small percentage of competitors that are very good. And so you'll get to test yourself. Like, hey, what does it feel like to go against a national champion? What does it feel like to go against a world champion? So still spar with them and test yourself, see what it's like. It'll let you know when you're, like, say if you're watching the UFC and you're wondering, like, okay, that guy's a 2-time national champion in the UFC. Well, if you have a 2-time national champion in your gym, train with them, spar with them, and you can kind of see what that skill level feels like. And it's a fun thing to do, if you put it that way. If you're beating yourself up because the young professional is getting the better of you, then don't do that. Don't let it stress you out too much. Instead, I'd say think of it like think about making yourself a better version of yourself every 90 days. Every 90 days, like, is a standard, like, is a good checkpoint to, could you beat yourself 90 days for, or, like, you know, if you look back 90 days, 3 months, could I beat myself? As long as you're doing that, or you are improving in 90-day increments, you're in a good spot. That's good. That is manageable. That's a good, consistent pace where you're getting better. That's okay. Then you're going to improve, and whether your goal is to be a purple belt or a black belt, you will get there eventually if you just think just 90-day increments. We have lots of students that we have lots of competitors that are fighting, competing, they're doing tournaments all the time, and we have lots of people that don't compete, but they still have lost 50 pounds, or they've lowered their resting heart rate, or their certification for their health insurance, or their job, their profession, training has helped them with that. So think, it's not all about tournaments, it's not all about fights, fighting competitively. There's way more intrinsic value out of training than just that. And the thing I'll say is, just understand since you've decided to do jiu-jitsu, congratulations, whether you know it or not, you've decided to learn one of the most difficult things that a person can sign up for a class to learn. It's very difficult. I've trained NFL players, college wrestlers, college basketball players, lawyers, CPAs. I've trained all types of people, and I've never met anybody that when they started training jiu-jitsu was like, oh yeah, this is really easy. Like, never. High-level athletes, very intelligent people. I've never met anyone that thought it was easy. So congratulations for taking on a difficult project. It'll make you better in the long run. You'll get a lot of enjoyment out of it. You'll run into a fair amount of frustration as well. Believe it or not, it will actually make the the lows will make the highs feel worth it. And the end result of training is it will give you like a lot of physical benefits, lower body fat, lower resting heart rate. There's a lot of health benefits that'll come to it. But one of the really cool, I think one of the most important benefits of it is something that I take for granted. I was walking my daughter. Where we live, there's a walking path by a creek, and it's pretty secluded. My mom will come and babysit for me, and my mom was telling me about how she was worried to walk my daughter back there because it's so secluded, and she's worried that, you know, because it's secluded, she couldn't call for help, and there's bad cell phone service there, so it's kind of a little bit dangerous. But one of the things is, like, I can walk my daughter down that path completely secluded and with basically no anxiety. And I can do the same thing walking into a bar or nightclub or a football game or something like that. Because of all the stress that you're going to go through in training and all the times you're going to get tapped and you're going to get beat. And then once you start getting offensive, where you start being able to take people down and start being able to submit people, it does give you a true self-confidence when it comes to physical altercations, where you're not going to actually walk around like a, you know, being like a douchebag, aggro, like rude person. It will just allow you to walk through life without, so lots of people walk through life with a physical intimidation or an anxiety about them just when they're just living normal life. I will say the jiu-jitsu is going to take that away. So once you get good, once you have enough training, that if you suffer from that, like a physical anxiety or different scenarios, you're worried about walking, you know, walking down a certain place because you're worried that there's not good line of sight or you couldn't call for help, it is going to mitigate and get rid of that for you. So it will give you a physical confidence that you maybe don't have right now, but without making you stupid and overconfident, where you can still get yourself in trouble even if you know jiu-jitsu. I hope this episode was helpful. It was a long one, I hope if you're just joining a gym or you're going to join a gym, I hope this episode helps you out and gives you a good starting context on what you need to expect when you're going into a jiu-jitsu gym. And tune in for the next one. We'll have one with wrestling, and we'll have one for boxing and kickboxing as well. Hope you enjoyed this one. If you are at the gym, again, we got Warriors Den Fighting Championship next Saturday. It is in Burns, Tennessee. I believe it's close to Dixon, Tennessee. You can buy those tickets online. It's Warriors Den Fighting Championship. Cameron is fighting an MMA fight. Curtis has a kickboxing fight. And Trey has a kickboxing bout as well. October 23rd, we got the Nashville Open IBJJF tournament. And then October 30th, we have Naga in Franklin. So all of those, if you're looking to compete. And then after that, November 20th, we got Ben Sharp fighting on the Valor Underground card. We also have Austin in a fight on the Valor Underground for the 20th, and we might have Cameron on there again. The main event is former UFC fighter Dustin Ortiz, a good friend of mine, old teammate and training partner. So that should be a really cool show if you you want to go watch one. So we got good stuff on the books and more stuff to come. Hope you enjoyed it. See you.